You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic, holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
Last week, I was among 1,300 functional medicine doctors and practitioners at the Institute for Functional Medicine Annual International Conference. And we were there all to learn cutting-edge science and clinical pearls on the potential of neuroplasticity and how to reverse neurodegeneration. Although I didn't get the pleasure to meet him, my next guest was also there, Dr. Will Cole. He's one of the leading functional medicine practitioners who specializes in clinically, investigating underlying factors and customizing health programs for chronic conditions such as thyroid issues, autoimmune, hormone dysfunctions, and a lot more. Now, great to have you here on Wellness for Life, Dr. Will.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk with you.
Absolutely. Now, can you tell our listeners how, as a chiropractor, you got interested in functional medicine?
Yeah, so I went to a Southern California University of Health Sciences in Los Angeles, and it's by itself a very integrative school. I mean, they have the acupuncture and oriental medicine program, a nurse practitioner program. Most of my professors were actually medical doctors. So it was quite an integrative environment to be at in California. And I heard of a guy called Datis Karazian, who we both saw speak this past weekend. In LA, and he had gone to my school. He was older than I was, and I heard he was talking about this thing called functional medicine. And I really haven't looked back since. And I really feel like, you know, functional medicine blends the best of Western medicine, which is labs and evidence based, and the best of alternative medicine was actually, you know, getting somebody healthy and well. And I love it. I eat and breathe functional medicine. And it really was through Datis Karazian and what he was doing and is still doing in the field.
Yes, I've been practicing for 28 years, and for the first 7 years of my chiropractic practice, I was a sports medicine specialist. But what got me interested in functional medicine and environmental medicine was actually when my son, who's now 22, but when he was about a year old, he started getting severe allergies. And that was the only way that we were able to heal his body through functional medicine and looking at the really core issues and the root causes of his condition. Now, give us an explanation. What is functional medicine?
Yeah, so the way I describe it, and I'm sorry, I'm sure you have your own way of describing it as well. But for me, it's like if I look at the main differences between functional medicine and mainstream medicine and break it down, it'd be number one, we interpret labs using a thinner reference range. So all your listeners know they get these labs from their doctor and it says, you know, your number should be X to Y within this range. Well, we get that reference range from a statistical bell curve average of people who go to that lab, that specific lab location, actually. So if you go to another lab, you'll see those reference ranges will vary from lab to lab, other than maybe cholesterol and vitamin D, which are more standardized. The rest are the variable based on the bell curve. And people that typically go to labs are sick people. They're people that are managing their medications or they don't feel well. That's why they're having the labs ran. So there's a lot of people that go to the labs to say, hey, why do I feel the way that I do? They go to their doctor to have these labs run, and the labs largely come back normal, even though they know instinctively, I don't feel normal. Like, why are they saying everything's fine? And then you're told, you know, you're just depressed, here's an antidepressant, or you're just getting older, or you just need to lose weight. All these sort of well-intentioned excuses as to why you could be having symptoms despite all these quote-unquote normal labs. What they're unintentionally saying is you're a lot like the other sick people that make up the population of that lab, because either they're not running the right labs or they're not interpreting the labs they're running currently properly, or both. So in functional medicine, we use a much thinner range within that larger reference range of where your body's thriving, where your body feels fantastic. And that's a much thinner bracket of numbers within that larger reference range. So it can really give insight into, you know, why you're feeling the way that you do, which is there's a reason for that. And people start to think, well, maybe it's just, you know, in my head, maybe I'm making it up, or they go from doctor to doctor to doctor with a pile of labs and nothing to show for it because everyone says they're normal. And then in functional medicine, we also run more comprehensive labs. So we're looking at things like microbiome issues, underlying gut issues, toxicity issues, hormonal imbalances, food sensitivities, all of these pieces of the puzzle that give rise to the ICD-10 code, that give rise to this diagnosis code. So we want to find out these root core issues, and then we realize everybody's different. There's not a cookie-cutter approach to getting well, and what works for one person, let's just say, with the same health problem, that's the three people with a thyroid issue, what works for one person can flare the next person up, and the next person, you don't notice it making a difference. So we try not to be biased as, you know, this is the route that everybody with this health issue should do, because we have to look at their labs, we have to look at their health history, and then what actually works in their life and what doesn't work in their life. And we use food as medicine, herbal botanical medicines, medications when needed, and lifestyle changes and mind body, all of that stuff to really be an integrative, comprehensive, evidence-based approach. So that's my long-winded soapbox.
I love it.
Functional medicine.
That's great. Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks, Dr. Will. I always look at when functional medicine, it's to me, it's like personal medicine, strategy medicine, where you are optimizing these seven key areas of your health. And this could be preventive as well. You can call it preventive. And we look at, you know, optimizing your nutrition and making sure you're balancing your hormones. As you said earlier, we want to reduce inflammation. We want to fix that gut. We want to improve detoxification so you can get all those toxins out so you can start feeling better right away. And of course, boosting our energy level, our energy metabolism. And I always talk about the mighty mitos. And then we want to also reduce stress and calm our mind. And by doing all that, you're basically going to prevent disease, prevent damage to our cells. You know, a lot of research now, we go into the autoimmune diseases. And I know that, you know, back in, gosh, in the 2000s, and I think maybe 2008-9 was when they first started talking about the statistics of autoimmune disease. It was only like about 9 million in the U.S. And now they're saying in, you know, right now, currently, it's like 50 million or more Americans are suffering from some form of autoimmune conditions. Can you explain a bit about autoimmunity and why you think there's a rise in these numbers here?
Yeah, it is exploding. Basically all of the main autoimmune conditions. And I think a lot of people, they kind of know that term, autoimmunity, and maybe they don't know exactly what they're talking about, what we're talking about. But there's over, at this point, and again, the numbers are only rising at this point, but there's over 100 diagnosable autoimmune diseases today, and another 40 in addition to that 100 that at least have an autoimmune component to them. You're right. There's about 50 million Americans with an autoimmune disease, but the diagnosis criteria for autoimmunity is quite end stage issues, meaning that, you know, for example, for celiac disease, there has to be about 80% destruction of the villi before it, you know, it shows up on a biopsy and they're catching it and they're saying, labeling it as celiac disease. There has to be about the 90% destruction is the criteria. Destruction of your adrenal glands before they'll label it with Addison's disease or autoimmune adrenal gland disease. And there has to be about 70% destruction of the myelin sheath before it shows up in an imaging study and they'll label it with MS. So these didn't happen overnight, 70, 80, 90% destruction of parts of your body. There are millions more that have 50, 40, somewhere percent destruction of parts of their body because they're in this autoimmune inflammation spectrum. They're not bad enough to maybe be full-blown autoimmune diseases, even though there's lots of people that fit that criteria. But there are millions more that are undiagnosable. They may have a positive ANA, a positive general autoimmune lab, but you're told, you know, this looks like lupus, or this maybe it'll be lupus in a couple of years. Come back then, and we'll give you a steroid or an immunosuppressant. What sense does it make to wait till the body's destroyed enough of itself to then be put on a steroid or Humira and be reactive when you can do something now to really take responsibility for your health, modulate the immune system, the things you just mentioned, dampen inflammation and deal with the microbiome. So there's three stages on the autoimmune inflammation spectrum. There's silent autoimmunity, meaning you don't notice anything, and if you ran a lab, you see a positive ANA or a positive antibody. And then the stage two is this autoimmune reactivity. And then stage three is the full-blown autoimmune disease. So, yeah, that's the rise of it is due to the amount of stress that our genome is under. These genetic predispositions have always been there. for thousands of years. But now this mismatch between our DNA and the world around us is now awakening these latent genetic predispositions that, again, have always been there, but are now being triggered due to viruses and stress and microbiome issues and toxicity. All of these epigenetic factors can turn on these bad genes, so to speak, for autoimmunity. So that's, in a nutshell, the autoimmune problem we're seeing.
Let's talk a little bit more deeper, because I want our listeners to know what some of the main triggers that they can be, you know, dealing with today, what they can change today so that this autoimmunity is not something that's going to happen into their future. So what can we share today about what are some of the major triggers, the main triggers or contributing factors that people can change in our lives right now to prevent autoimmunity issues?
Sure. Yeah. So the research estimates that about 1/3 of this autoimmune puzzle is due to genetics, and 2/3 are these epigenetic factors, things that we want to be talking about right now. What can you do in your life today to support your immune system, to protect your DNA, and to mitigate the triggering and the flare-ups of this autoimmune inflammation if you can bring? And one of the first things you can do, you're talking about practical stuff. If you have not done it already, this is like ground zero, is looking at the foods that you eat. And if you can deal with all the downstream stuff all you want, but if you don't have that core foundation, you're going to be at the very best, just be palliative as far as symptoms are concerned. You're not going to be core structurally changing aspects of the immune system. So it starts with the foods that you eat, and it's overplayed. People are kind of saying like, duh, well, we know that. But I mean, a lot of people do it, but they don't do it wholeheartedly, or they're doing it, but they're holding on to all these foods that can't be and are linked in the medical literature to triggering autoimmunity. So the biggest ones in the research that are linked is if you have a family history of autoimmune conditions, or if you have autoimmune inflammation yourself, one of the first things you can cut out is grains containing gluten. That, you know, the G word, it's like a swear word in functional medicine, but you know, is it a problem for everybody? No, maybe not a problem for everybody, but it's a problem for a lot of autoimmune patients, and that's what we're talking about right now. So if you haven't already, the protein found in wheat and rye and barley and spelt and some oats, this is one of those proteins that have changed dramatically over a very short period of time through the hybridization of the wheat industry. And researchers are supposing that this mismatch between this crossbreeding of this protein is causing this triggering of inflammation in the body and the destruction of what it does to the gut through zonulin and occludin, these proteins that govern gut lining permeability. It creates that sort of called leakiness, that leaky gut syndrome, which is an unfortunate term, isn't it? Leaky gut syndrome. People are kind of grossed out about that. But intestinal permeability, basically things are passing through the gut that shouldn't be passing through the gut. And one of those, a gateway food drug, so to speak, is our grains containing gluten. And for a lot of autoimmune patients, dairy as well. And specifically with dairy, it's also the mismatch. It's the dairy industry and what's done. So just with the wheat, with the hybridization, you have the crossbreeding of cows and the way that the breeding practices have happened with the cows, that you have these subtypes of beta A1 casein and beta A2 casein. And what research is finding is that most of the problems that we're finding with dairy and what it's doing with leaky gut syndrome is this beta A1 subtype. And now farmers are trying to bring up these, you know, heritage genes. So we get the OG casein, the beta A2 casein, which isn't much of an issue for most people. So that you're seeing cropping up more A2 milks and, you know, Indian and African cows that have 99-100% amounts of these A2 and not the A1, the beta A1. And, New Zealand as well and Australia are having crop, you know, increased levels of these beta A2 variants of casein in their cows. So dairy is another one, and looking at that. And so those are the two big ones, would be dairy and gluten. And then within, beyond that, you can look at other foods that can cause inflammation too, and look at the idea of lectins. So healthy foods can be high in lectins. So people with exotoimmune inflammation issues, they want to look at limiting or removing as much as possible high lectin foods, which are proteins that can cause inflammation in the body for some people. So things like legumes, things like gluten-free grains, these type of high lectin foods can be a problem. And also the alkaloids in nightshade vegetables, like tomatoes and white potatoes peppers. These things can drive inflammation as well. So that's probably a lot. I don't know if I was rambling.
Yeah,
you
mentioned about lectins. We had Stephen Gundry on my show, and he talked about his book, Plant Paradox. Very interesting information. And it's stirring up a lot of stress in a lot of people because, you know, he talks about a lot of vegetables and a lot of foods that we love, you know, cucumber and tomatoes, as you're saying, and beans and all kinds of stuff. But what he did mention was that we can use a high pressurized, one of those pressure cookers to, reduce those lectins to make it better. So there are things that we can do. At least that's what his belief systems are. But, you know, once we actually start implementing all of this as a functional medicine practitioner, what else do you incorporate? We've changed the diet, let's say. We're starting to heal the gut, putting healthier bacteria back into the gut, making sure that the microbiome is reducing that inflammatory reaction. What else can we do naturally to help us manage our autoimmune condition?
Yeah. Some other active tools you can do is really make your life a cleanse and make your life a detox, and supporting healthy detoxification pathways. And it starts with food too, but focusing on foods that help with detoxification, like green leafy vegetables and sulfur-rich vegetables like onions and garlic. These things can increase methylation pathways, and broccoli sprouts, those are some good foods. So using foods to support healthy detoxification pathways, milk thistle tea, you can do, and this is just not a, this isn't a program. This isn't a diet. This is not a fad thing you're going to do for 3 weeks. This is something that you're owning as your own practice and making your life a cleanse. So that's another thing that you can do. Bring in anti-inflammatories into your life. And for some people with autoimmune inflammation issues, they have to really do a lot of it to really see the benefits, where a lot of people are like doing these good things. They know they need to bring inflammation down, but they're not really seeing the benefits of it. So a lot of it's just that you're doing the good things, but you're not doing enough of it. So things like green tea, things like turmeric are really shown in the medical literature to drive down neuroinflammation and systemic inflammation. And another thing you can definitely do is manage stress levels, because you could be, you know, eating all the right foods and eating kale and kombucha all day long. But if you're, you know, giving your body a big slice of stress every day, it's going to be at the very best counteracting all the good stuff, all the good healthy stuff that you're doing for your body. So it's overplayed again in our field to say, well, we know stress isn't good. What do you do about it? But you're really going to have to take this seriously and make it an active part of your life. And whatever is stressing you in your life, you're going to have to come up with what's your relationship with stress. I mean, the human race is here because we can handle a certain amount of grit, and that's a good thing. So I'm not saying, you know, we should avoid all stress, but what's your relationship with stress? Are you accepting the situation that is stressing you out? Are you having inner resistance to it, or can you change it? And if you can't change it, you're going to have to accept what it is and not resist this thing that's stressing you out in your life, whether it's marital issue or kids or work or life. You're going to have to really look at your relationship with that event or person and have inner non-resistance towards it, because that stress, I mean, it's shown in the medical literature that people that are diagnosed with these autoimmune issues, they tend to have more stressful life events the year prior to diagnosis, because stress is a possible trigger for it and a perpetuator of it, and flares as a whole. I see many times if people are going through, let's say they have ulcerative colitis or, you know, another inflammatory bowel issues, if they're going through a stressful life event, they're more likely to have a flare. So to really bring active practices and owning, bringing healthy stress management tools into your life.
That's a very good point. You know, just this week I have a patient come in, and she came in with extremely tight and spasmodic neck, left shoulder, but she actually had this big patch of eczema, a rash on the neck. I treat a lot of skin disorders in my practice, and an eczema patch. And it actually, you know, doing all, going over her labs, doing everything that we've been doing, changing her diet, all of that, it actually had to do with stress relation. You know, it was triggered by an event that gave her an extreme amount of stress 2 years ago, and it just never stopped. So you're absolutely right that we've got to manage it. I'd say that that's one of the harder things practitioners have in trying and getting our patients to be able to be more mindful and make the core shifts that they can do day to day, whether it has to do with journaling, meditating, being out in nature, taking baths, doing whatever it takes. They have a difficult time being good to themselves. Do you see that to be true, Dr. Will?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that many people, especially moms and grandmas and caretakers, they are taking care of everybody else but not taking care of themselves. And you cannot be a great mom or wife or a caretaker if you don't have your health. So you have to realize that in a way, you are taking care of your loved ones by taking care of yourself. Because if they need you around, if you're super fatigued or if you're in pain or if you're not around, that's not going to be good for them either. So it's just, self-care is really tough for people to really say, okay, you're going to have to take the time out because we're all busy. And that's the thing too, is like, I don't have time to do that. Well, what are you waiting for? Because if you're waiting for the perfect utopian time where you have all this time to sit and like make bone broth and like meditate all day long, that's not going to happen. You're going to have to carve out some time to really bring some self-care into your life.
That's right. As a functional medicine practitioner, I consider that we are also coaches that will help with the communication between your mind, body, and spirit, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a major factor. And I do see the fact that you can have, you know, a handful of people with the same lab, similar labs, they're going through similar issues. And the mental state, the awareness state between the people are one of the biggest variables of how that person heals. If they're in constant inner resistance and stress, they're going to probably be more apt statistically be slower healers versus the patient that gives their body grace, that has inner non-resistance towards it and just has a full excitement and positive energy towards this whole process. They're more apt to heal faster. I mean, that's a generalization, but it's honestly a commonality that I see between people who get better and the people that are slower to get better.
That's right. You know, that conference that we were at together, although we were probably, there were so many people there. It was an incredible event, wasn't it?
It was great.
I really enjoyed all of the new information and things that I've already known about neuroplasticity, how to enhance our brain, because it's one area that people are not realizing. And they think it's all about old age. You know, I'm losing my memory. I can't think about, you know, I left my keys, whatever, all that. But little clues are giving you information that, you know what, you've got possibly what's called a leaky brain or a permeability in your brain that is causing inflammation. And that, of course, can lead to dementia and Alzheimer's. And everyone there, we were so excited to hear all of the clinical pearls that we got from these doctors. And Dr. Datis was there, Karazian. He's awesome, always, always awesome to listen to. Can you give us some of what you got, the takeaways from the conference?
It was really great. It was amazing. And I think one of the biggest things that I liked hearing is Dr. Brednison and what he's doing with dementia and Alzheimer's is really remarkable in California. And his view is that he thinks that cognitive decline, thinks that dementia and Alzheimer's should be rare. It should not be as ubiquitous as it is today. It's almost like just accepted as normal that when you get older, you're going to get dementia or you're just, like you're saying, you just forget names and things. He just thinks that this should be completely a rare thing. And he's doing amazing things at reversing mild Alzheimer's, reversing cognitive decline. It's really remarkable. And the impact that the things we're talking about today really have on it, and looking at the food they're eating and looking at, for the people with these neurodegenerative issues, at what ketogenic approach could do, and reducing stress and optimizing sleep, all of these things that we sometimes we take for granted, what it can do. And also just looking at labs and looking at the research that's being done on basic labs that you can get from your regular doctor currently, things like C-reactive protein and things like homocysteine, looking at inflammation and making sure they're in the functional optimal range. And that's something that people can do right here and now with their doctor, is running homocysteine with your doctor, making sure it's below 7. Above 7 has been linked in the medical literature to increasing blood-brain barrier permeability and brain inflammation, like you said, this leaky brain syndrome, C-reactive protein, inflammation, making sure that it's less than 1. These are very basic things that you can do to see what your baseline is. And if your baseline is not good, you can start taking action on your health today to really take responsibility for these issues that are, again, like you said, reversible, preventable, manageable things.
What I loved about was that, you know, pretty much every doctor, you know, including Dave Bredesen, Perlmutter was there. Was there Dr. Perlmutter? You know, Kavrazian, of course, Minolosino, Dr. Minolosino, all of them, they all talked about exercise. And I am so happy that they did, because I really think that movement is key to preventing disease and of course Alzheimer's, but many other diseases, pretty much every one that we deal with every day, diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, Alzheimer's, as we say, autoimmune conditions, gut issues. If you exercise and in an optimal level without you doing like chronic, like what I mean, like an hour to 2 hour of running, you don't have to do all that, right? You can do high intensity interval training, things like that to reduce inflammation in your body, to prevent brain issues, and enhance cognitive function. You picked that up too, didn't you?
Absolutely, and the impact it has on increasing BDNF, the brain-derived neurotrophic factors, basically allowing your brain to grow and regenerate, neurogenesis. That's just cool stuff, and stuff that you can do here and now is just to get moving and to sweat, you know, as many times during the week as you can. It's not, obviously, it has many far-reaching benefits, but specifically to what we're talking to today, it really is a brain booster, and it's important for us to remember that.
Thank you, Dr. Will. Oh, goodness. Your website is drwillcole.com, Dr. WILLCOLE.com, and you can also find Dr. Will on Facebook, and that's Dr. Spelled out D-O-C-T-O-R, Will Cole. And thanks so much. I really appreciate you being here. I put a link on my Wellness for Life radio show page on Radio MD. And until next time, go out there and live your best life today, full of energy, enthusiasm, and ultimate health and wellness. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies on the Wellness for Life show right here on Radio MD. Stay well.